Welcome to the Create and Grow Show. My name is Georgi Todorov and I'm your host. Today, we have an incredible guest, Gabriela Covey. She's the founder of Bright Valley Marketing, an SEO and digital PR link building agency that helps build brands. Hi, Gabi. How are you doing?
Hi. Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Georgi.
Of course. You're welcome. And the topic is super interesting for me as well. Digital PR.
Yeah, digital PR.
Tell me about your experience with SEO and digital PR.
Yeah, so just in a nutshell, we were back in 2016, I would say, we were doing a lot of kind of the traditional PR for the local companies that we were working with. This was in Santa Cruz, where I started my agency. And our clients at the time, you know, they were getting featured in like the more local publications, Mercury Times and Santa Cruz Times and whatnot. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, it's amazing that, you know, that a company can get featured in a media outlet and get a backlink, you know, because I was thinking in terms of SEO and I was seeing the value, and it was very hard to do at the time. It still is, but I saw the SEO value in that. And then from that point onward, I kind of figured out like, okay, this is something we really need to focus on. But at the time, everyone was still doing the, you know, niche insertions and whatever they're called, and you know, those spammy guest posts, and they were working at the time. But I figured like, look, this is something that is sustainable and impactful in the long term, and this is something we should focus on more and more. And you know, in the last couple of years, it's become a very in-demand service just because of how much value it provides.
Absolutely. Digital PR is the future. It's the present and the future, actually.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. With digital PR, you know, you are really building your brand. And Google nowadays, you see what, you know, you see the types of websites that are ranking, right? It's all these brands, big brands that are memorable, that are talked about all the time in the media. You know, I always mention how Apple and Tesla and Disney, they're always talked about in the media, you know? So Google trusts these brands. And one of the ways that you can sort of become a brand in Google's eyes is by continuously getting mentioned in the media, getting interviewed on TV even, you know. But of course, from a digital PR standpoint, we're always thinking about the links because that's what matters to us the
Absolutely.
Most.
Absolutely. If there is no link, if there is only a mention, we should follow up and try to make it a link.
Always. Yeah. If a journalist is going to use your content and not credit you, you better go after that journalist. I mean, in a friendly way and say, hey, like, yeah. Absolutely. You always want to do that.
If it doesn't work in a friendly ways, find another way.
What does that mean? Wait, but, we're not going to go mafia style here.
Well, whatever works, basically. We need to make those links clickable, followed, if possible.
Yeah. If possible, some outlets will have like a policy where they're like, well, we can't, you know, we're not going to link to a corporate, like a website, like that, a business website. We're just not going to do that. That's very rare because most of the time these journalists understand that there's this unwritten rule that if they're going to use your content, your digital PR content, your story, your data, they should credit you. You know, they understand kind of what they're supposed to do. So in like 99% of the cases, it's all good, but you know, you can't like expect every single media placement to have that like a do follow backlink, but in like 90 to 95% of cases, you'll get that do follow backlink. Yeah,
of course. But you know, there is one problem with digital PR. One more problem besides that, sometimes journalists don't credit you. The other problem is that it's not easy. Digital PR is a hit or miss sometimes. Let's talk about digital PR for beginners. What we should know if we are beginners in digital PR and this is our first campaign.
Okay, so if you're a beginner and this is like the first time you've done a digital PR or you're about to do a digital PR campaign, you need to understand that your first time, most likely you're not going to get it right, right? Okay, make sure your expectations are not set too high. Like, don't expect to get 20, 30, 40 pieces of you know, articles that come out that are covered from your campaign. You know, try to strive for something a little bit less, and that's more manageable. You know, even getting three media placements with your first campaign, that's great. You know, that means your story has potential. So keep your expectations low in the beginning and keep trying. Keep learning. You know, do as many campaigns as you can, because over time you're gonna see a pattern. You're gonna look at the campaigns that are doing really well and get a lot of coverage, and you're gonna look at the campaigns that are not doing very well and don't get a lot of coverage. And you can compare and find trends and see what, you know, what's working and what's not working, so that you can keep improving.
Yeah, of course, this makes sense. Can you tell us more about your specific process that you use in digital PR?
Yeah, absolutely. So we always start by understanding the themes of your website. Like, let's say you're my client and you have a website. We look at your website, we look at your products, your services, what your website is about as a whole. And then we work backwards from there. So based on the themes of your website, we start thinking of ideas that can potentially work for you, that are newsworthy, relevant to society, that journalists might be interested in covering, but that are also related to what you offer on your website. So if you're like a, you know, if you have a business website, we would never do like a story about pets, you know, because that's completely different. And that adds no value really from an SEO standpoint to your website, right? If we did like a pet story. So we always kind of work backwards from your website and what your business is all about. And then we branch out from there. And we identify different ideas that, you know, they go from very, very specific to broader. And we never want to go too broad, because again, it's all about striking a balance between relevancy and newsworthiness. So once we do that, once we've identified a solid idea, we do our due diligence. So we go on Google and we research the idea to make sure it hasn't been done in the last, you know, several months, 6 months to a year, sometimes more. So, because otherwise, if it's been done, then it's very unlikely that journalists are going to cover the same story, right? We want to have like a unique angle. And then once we have that, we gather the data, essentially. So we either...
Wait, can I interrupt you? Sorry, yeah. Because this is super interesting. I think many of the specialists who do digital PR get stuck on the first step when they do the ideation, when they try to brainstorm ideas. What is the process here? Are there any shortcuts that we can take to come up with ideas for our campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. So the easiest thing that you can do really is look at the successful ones that have been done in your industry before. And you can just, again, use Google News, and you can type in, you know, keywords related to your industry. Plus, I have like a Boolean search I can send to you, but we usually just, you know, we'll type in the industry, and then we'll do study or data or poll or survey, you know, so all those things that will pull up relevant campaigns that have been done before, that have been not only done, but have gotten coverage. So then you can pull up an article that's, you know, about that campaign, and then you can sort of reverse engineer that campaign and see, you know, see what type, like, why did it perform really well? You know, you can, was it a ranking? Was it a, you know, like a data campaign? Like, what kind of campaign was it? And you can get inspiration from campaigns that have been done successfully before. And what you can do is just add, like, maybe add a unique spin to that campaign, give it a bit of a different angle. And then there you go, you have a new campaign.
Yeah, that's great. You can get ideas from other industries, see what worked in other industries, and try to use that for inspiration for your own industry.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's one of the easiest ways to do it. CNBC, if you follow their page, I follow them on Facebook. They post like surveys and rankings from all sorts of different companies, like all the time. So they're really fun to read, and, you know, they get coverage. So you can,
Wallet
publishes a bunch of, you know, finance related, the happiest cities in America, the worst cities for this, for that, you know?
Yeah. And what is the next step to collect data, I guess?
Yeah, so the next step would be to determine, how are you going to collect the data? So what we like to do primarily is to gather the data by serving, people in America, respondents. We use a company very similar to Polefish. And then we survey about 3,000 respondents and gather the data that way. And then we segment the data state by state. So then we can compare the data from, say, California to, New York. And we can see state by state breakdown. Or in some cases, we look at public databases, if that's an option for the campaign. So we look at databases such as county health rankings, BLS.gov. There's so many. I think more than like 100 Statista, WeatherSpark, if you're looking at weather patterns and stuff like that. So there's so many databases out there that are reliable and are public. So they're free to use for the most part.
Yeah. After that, you have the idea, you have the database or the survey results, you collect everything, you put together the statistics. What is the next step? How do you find journalists?
Yeah, so the next step is, indeed, to find the right journalists that want to cover the campaign. So you can do this in one of two ways. You can use a media database tool, which is what we use. We use Cision Media Database. There's also Prowly, that's like sort of like the more affordable option. I think they're a couple hundred dollars a month. Or you can find the prospects manually on Google News, you can, or Twitter, or I should say X. So there's several ways. So if you have the budget, I totally recommend using a media database tool, because with that tool, you can actually type in different keywords. You can segment by journalists that write for national media outlets and regional media outlets that have talked about a subject very similar to your campaign in the past. So you can really get granular and you can create a list that way. So when we use, for example, a Cision Media Database, we always have at least two tiers of journalists that we target. The first tier is journalists that have written about a similar story or similar topic related to our campaign recently, right? Like in the last, I would say, 6 months to a year, because those journalists are the most likely to cover your story because they've covered something, in that realm in the past. Mm-hmm. So we have tier one journalists, then tier two journalists are the more broader kind of like, let's say if the campaign that we're working on is like a business themed campaign, then we identify business journalists that just cover business. So those are still relevant, but just not as relevant as tier one, but obviously they're important. So we want to create at least two tiers, and then that's how we create our lists. And then we also sometimes use Google as well to find journalists that are relevant, and we add those to our list as well. So that's kind of the way to go.
Yeah, that's great that we mention different ways to do digital PR. We mention the expensive way to buy a Cision subscription, more affordable way, Prowly, and the free one to go to Twitter, to go to Google, and just research what journalists are writing about. And that's the same for surveys and polls. You can use Polefish, you can use another survey provider, but you can also use LinkedIn posts, for example, I guess.
You can, and you can use your own, if you have like your own newsletter contacts that have, if you have like a good database of contacts list, then you can use that as well. I would try to stick to surveying at least, at the very minimum, like 1,000 people, because that if you go any lower, it starts to look like, well, this isn't a real study, because your sample size is so low. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. So the more respondents you can get, the better. If you can get like 10,000, then whoa, But then it obviously gets very difficult to collect such vast amount of or survey vast amount of respondents.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I guess that 1,000 is the bare minimum, though.
Yeah, I would say, 1,000 is like the very, very minimum.
Yeah. Gabi, you sent me one of your campaigns, the best pizza cities in America for 2024. Do you want to look into that and digest it and to explain how you created this campaign and how you reached this success?
Yeah, so the United States of Pizza, that was the campaign name. So that one was a really wildly successful campaign. It was basically a list of the top 250 cities and towns in America for pizza. And we didn't run a survey for this campaign, but it wasn't the way that we primarily collected the data. We collected the data by looking at Google reviews. So for each city that we identified, we looked at the aggregate of the reviews for the pizzerias in that city, and we created a ranking. And then after that, we basically hit up all the city, like regional specific journalists, and said, hey, Tulsa, Oklahoma ranked number 3 for, you know, the best pizza in America. And journalists that covered that area, that metro, then decided to write an article, you know, say, wow, like we're ranked number 3 out of 250 places in America for pizza, you know. So it was this, yeah, so some topics are the really fun ones tend to get a lot of coverage and can even go viral. So this one sort of went viral. It got like over, I think, 186 backlinks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's massive.
TV coverage, I believe, in at least 4 or 5 segments on TV, TV coverage. It got shared on Instagram. It got the client probably got so much referral traffic from this. But the nice thing too is that the client's page, where we visually illustrated the data, where we created the ranking, and this is something we can talk about as well, you know, that visual asset page actually ranked for over 450 keywords itself. So that page ended up driving organic traffic to the client's website.
The one that you can embed?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we call it the linkable asset page, where you're essentially illustrating your data in a visual format, like an infographic, an interactive map, you know, something that helps people understand like the rankings, you know. So for this campaign, we had the top 10 locations illustrated, and then a table below that with all the remaining rankings. And then we had like the key findings, the implications and methodology. So it's kind of like that place on your website that summarizes the campaign. So this one just got so much coverage. But you know, again, it's a really good topic. Everyone loves pizza. You can't go wrong with that. And I think one of the key elements of this campaign success too is that it actually was a pretty good timing with National Pizza Day. It was crazy, right? Because there's like all these like national days, like National Ice Cream Day, Pizza Day. So it was aligned with that National Pizza Day. And then also we layered a survey on top of the rankings to give the campaign a little bit more of an edge, more talking points for the journalists to cover. So in that survey of 1,000 people, we asked them questions like, what's your least favorite pizza topping? How far are you willing to travel for a good slice of pizza? Do you think you can make your own, pizza at home that tastes better than like a restaurant or something? You know, we just added these fun questions. And then we were able to more talking points for our press release. So that made the press release juicier and more interesting to journalists.
More like an original research.
Yes. Yeah. More original. Yeah. Yeah.
For me, it's very interesting what aggregator you used from technical point of view to collect all those Google reviews, and how automatic was that, and how much labor actually?
It was pretty labor intensive. So this was actually all manual. We did not use an aggregate. So this was manual labor. But I know that, you know, there's the tools out there that you can use to help with this. So we're always exploring ways to, you know, kind of automate, or at least like make our jobs easier and faster, so we can gather the data faster. And I think that's where, you know, AI is going to really come into play, because AI is just going to make data crunching much easier. I mean, it already sort of is.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see that, because that I think that's probably one of the hardest parts about data analysis is, you know, you need to look at trends, you need to identify correlations, you need to identify regional variations and all these things that can be very, you know, just very time consuming and just labor intensive. Right. So with AI, you can plug in all the data. And we've actually tried this with ChatGPT, but right now it's not very accurate. We're like, no. Yeah, but it's going to get better. This is just the beginning of the AI revolution. So, I mean, I'm expecting within the next year to 2 years max that, you know, you can just throw in an Excel sheet, an Excel file at ChatGPT and say, what are the top, you know, like trends? What are the top correlations from this data? Like what, you know, like basically ask it a bunch of questions.
And then yeah, let's see.
You know, because right now it gets it wrong.
Yeah, right now it's not great with data. It just can't count properly, but maybe in the future it will be better. Now if I ask GPT to create 50 words of intro, it creates 250, just doesn't know how to count.
No, I see ChatGPT and AI right now as like an infant, you know, like a baby, right? Mm-hmm. But the baby's gonna grow, and once it gets to maturity, it's gonna blow everyone away.
In a couple of years it will be totally different, but it's great that we are using it now because we are from the early adopters. And when it develops more, we can utilize it to the most.
And then in line with that, actually, I wanted to share too, you know, if you do want to use AI for, if you're running like your own digital PR campaign, what you can do is create your own chatbot. So you can basically feed ChatGPT with maybe I would say 10 to 15 of the top performing campaigns that are out there related to your industry. And then basically say, okay, here's a really successful campaign. Here's a really successful, feed it all that data. And then ChatGPT will kind of figure out sort of like why the, you know, those campaigns were successful. It's pretty good with finding those trends within that data set. And then you can say, okay, based on these types of ideas, come up with like 5 or 10 ideas for my website. And then you can add your website, make sure you have internet enabled. I think it uses Bing, so make sure that's enabled. It'll look at your website and then it'll come up with ideas. They're not going to be perfect. You still need to, you know, use common sense and see, okay, do these ideas make sense? Like, have they been done before? But it gives you kind of, again, like creative, gets your creative juices flowing, which is important because sometimes it can be really hard to come up with an idea if you're new to this.
Wow, Gabby, you're throwing so much value here. I'm just, I have no words. Well, that's great. And this is the approach that we should use GPT as our assistant, not as a specialist, because it's not a specialist. And for research, for anything else, like virtual assistant job, it's great.
Yes.
But you need to guide it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And never just trust what it comes up with. Use it as your assistant.
Gabby, let's get back to this pizza campaign, because I'm getting hungry right now. The best pizza is in New York. Is this a surprise?
Not that one. That one was not a surprise. But the next one, I think, was pretty surprising. It was like, I think it was Tulsa,
Oklahoma. Yeah.
That one was pretty surprising. There were some in there that were very surprising. It was like,
what is the reason that Tulsa is on the second place? Not so many pizza places, and the ones pizza places that exist are probably great.
Yeah, so the ones that do exist in that area are ranked really high. So this was all, again, based on Google reviews and what people were saying for the pizza pizzerias in that area. So I guess Tulsa makes, you know, the best pizzas. You know, and again, what's really important to note here is that with these types of campaigns, you're not doing a academic research paper, right? Like you're not... This isn't like a double blind experiment, right? Like this isn't going to go in an academic journal. These types of campaigns, digital PR, are, you know, while yes, it's important that the data is factual and representative, but mm-hmm. there will be limitations to your studies. You know, sample size might be small. There's going to be all sorts of limitations, but the main idea, and journalists understand this, you know, they know that this is not an academic study. It's a fun study. These types of campaigns are really designed to get people talking and create engagement online, you know? So some people will say, well, like Tulsa, Oklahoma, like I've never heard of that before, you know, but then they'll be like, oh yeah, New York, of course, that's going to be number one. So that gets people talking. So in a lot of these articles, you will see that people in the comments section have said all these things, like either agreeing or disagreeing with the results. And all of that stuff is so valuable for journalists. Like that is what they want. They want to create engagement because that shows that their article is good. The media outlet looks good. It's getting more traffic too. So everyone sort of benefits in the end from this.
Yeah, definitely. And the best thing is that it gets so much engagement, social sharing on all the social media. It's type of a BuzzFeed article, basically. Not super legit research, but it makes people talk about it.
Yes, yeah. So for these types of campaigns, yes, it makes people talk about it. There, you know, we also do campaigns that are of a more serious nature. So those obviously, you know, the tone changes and everything. So, but those do really well as well. But if we're looking at the viral hits, you're looking at these types of campaigns, the really fun ones. There's a recent... a recent campaign that we did that also kind of went viral. It was like the sexiest police uniforms in America.
Are they different uniforms in different states?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know that because in the movies, it's always the same uniform.
No, it's different. And then so
is it? Okay.
Yeah, we did rank. We did like a ranking of like which state has the sexiest police uniform. And Texas came out on top, and it was really funny. We actually used AI to create the images. And this was really hard to do too, by the way, because AI again would get all these.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible with images. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But I mean, in the end we were able to feed in an image of a police officer in that area, in that state. And based on that, we said, okay, reverse, like create an image based on this. And it actually created a pretty accurate image. But again, you have to feed it the data. Like don't just tell it to do something. You have to show an example.
So you sent an example image and it worked properly after that.
Upload it to ChatGPT. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And great.
Yeah.
All right. I want to mention something super important and not forget about it. Everyone who is listening to the Create and Grow show, if you go to Kenner, Louisiana, don't order pizza because it's ranked on the last position, 250. So probably that will not be the best meal to get in Kenner, Louisiana. Remember that.
Sorry, Kenner, Louisiana.
Well, I guess that even that gets you some links if you're on the last place. Probably it got mentioned in the local media in Kenner.
You know what? Yeah, because this is, again, the top 250 places. I mean, there's a lot more places than 250 places in America. And if you make that cut, then you're pretty good.
Yeah, I guess so. And that's the reason why you included so many towns and cities in this ranking, because you want to send to the local media, send an email to them and get links from the local media websites. Mm-hmm. If you rank just the 51 states, then the reach is not so big, basically.
You nailed it right there. Yeah. So the longer the rankings are, basically the higher the chances are that you're going to get more links because of what you just mentioned. You can hit up different cities and journalists that write for those cities. Yeah.
Are the journalists from the small towns easier target to write about that? Maybe they don't have so much what to write about. And when they stumble upon something like that, they are willing.
You know what? I think that's a good theory. I think you're right. Yeah, I think that makes sense because national, you know, journalists that write for national media outlets write for, you know, usually very like different stories, right? That are national in nature and not like specific to a specific state or whatever or city. So yeah, for sure. You know, journalists are always looking for content. Always. They need stories. They need you, Georgie.
Yeah.
Need us. They're like, we don't know what to write about. So if you have a really good story and you pitch it to them, they're gonna hop on that, you know, and they're gonna write an article and they're gonna credit you, give you that backlink. And the turnaround time is fairly quickly for these types of campaigns. I would say, you know, within the first 2 weeks, like that's when you should start seeing coverage. If nothing happens after 2 weeks for a sort of like an evergreen campaign, so that is like one that's not like time sensitive, like about, you know, Christmas or something, you know, or like a holiday that's coming up. If it's like an evergreen campaign that can be done at any time of the year, if nothing comes out after 2 weeks, then you might want to look at your, you know, your outreach message, look at your open rates. Are journalists even opening your pitch? Are they clicking through to get more information? Are they clicking to your website or the linkable asset page? What's going on there? So you might have to re-angle or just maybe go back to the drawing board and do another campaign. But again, don't get discouraged if nothing comes in the first 2 weeks. So just wait at least 2 weeks, like 2 weeks, I would say. Yeah. And then you can assess the success.
Which outreach tool do you use to send emails?
Yeah, so we have our own distribution platform where we control like our own domain reputations. We have multiple domains that we outreach from, but there's different platforms. You can try. I know Brevo. I think now has like you its own like dedicated IP. You can have like your own dedicated IP address so that you're not sharing your domain reputation with other companies. This is getting into the realm of like email deliverability, and it's not my area of specialty. We have like a guy that takes care of all that for us on our team. So he looks at our domain reputation, and if we ever send like an outreach message that gets like flagged by journalists or something happens, like we'll see that. We'll know exactly like, oh my gosh, this, you know, this outreach message is just getting flagged, it's going to spam, or like it's just getting, you know, we're getting all these unsubscribes. So then we know like what we need to do, you know, that something in that message is triggering, you know, a journalist to click the unsubscribe button, or triggering the journalist server to automatically unsubscribe.
So do you see who is the journalist who flagged you?
I think we can. Again, that's like going outside of my realm, it's very technical. But we know when something is going wrong from like an email deliverability standpoint. Yeah, yeah. For sure. So, you know, on that note, like avoid including spam triggering words in your outreach message, anything related to, you know, I don't know, can I say it on this show? like, you
absolutely.
Know, kind of like the spammy words of, make money online of, like anything related to pharmaceuticals, firearms, things like that can trigger server spam filters and move your message into the spam folder. And then the journalist will never even see it. So you want to keep the outreach message, your pitch very clean. Don't sensationalize the subject line, like click here to check out these results. You know, don't be overly sensationalistic because that's bad too. And I think, yeah, I think that's about it.
You know, I have one challenge with email marketing. My emails go to promotional tab in Gmail and G Suite. Is there anything that I can do to make them go inbox?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I don't have the answer to that, but the more relevant that you can make your message to, you know, say to the journalist, the better. So if your outreach message really resonates with that journalist and it's something that they've written about, or it's like in their realm of interest based on like your research of knowing what that journalist has covered before, then the chances are that they're going to get that message in their inbox and not like in the spam folder or somewhere else. But for that specific question, I'm going to ask my email deliverability guy about that because I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess that just dragging the email from the promotional tab into the inbox would signal Google that this is supposed to go to the inbox. But I haven't tried it yet. Maybe I should try it with a few people who I know and ask them to do that.
Yeah, so I think, so the more relevant that you can make your outreach message, the better, right? And because if you are continuously sending out really, really good content to journalists, these journalists are going to be like excited when they get new campaigns from you, you know, so they're probably going to mark your message as important or something, you know, like star you, like add a little star to get your future emails like sent to the right folder because they love your content. So just create really, really good content, good campaigns, and you should be good to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Do you have such established relationships with journalists, or you just pitch new journalists?
Vast majority of journalists that we pitch to are new because, again, we are always looking to pitch the journalists that are the most relevant for a campaign. But we also have a list of friendly journalists. Those are journalists that we've interacted with before that are like, hey, if you have new stories for us, like, let us know. Like, we love your content. So we call those like our friendly journals. And we have a list of like our contacts that we do reach out to. But that's maybe like out of all the journalists that we contact, it's like less than 10%. You know, mm-hmm. I would between 5 to 10%. Are like existing relationships, but the vast majority are indeed new. Yeah, because again, the journalists, like they care about the story, and it's less when it comes to digital PR, it's less about relationships than it is about just, do you have a really good story for me? I need a story.
You nailed it, yeah. This is what I think as well, that relationships are so overrated in digital PR. Yeah. Oh, just build relationships, everybody says, but come on, you meet someone in person at some event, and you have deep conversation, 10, 15 minutes about something. You have many things in common. You built this relationship. And then you pitch them your lame story. They're not going to cover it. There is no value in it.
Yeah, you have to think about it. Like, what's in it for them? Like, why do they journalists want to write stories that make them look good, that lead to engagement, lead to shares, because that's what the journalists are measured on. Like, how good is your story? Like, is it leading to engagement? Is it getting people talking? Are people sharing the story? So if that journalist's article is getting shared, that makes the journalist look really good. So how can you make the journalist look good?
Opposite. Even if you have the established relationship and your story is not good, you're just going to embarrass them.
Yeah, exactly. And even in that case, like, you know, the journalists that we talk to and that we know personally, like, they're not going to feature every single story that we have, that we do, just because we are friends with them. They're not, you know, again, it's like, if the story is good, then they'll get featured. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes so much sense. We spoke about this evergreen campaign, the best pizza cities in America. Can we talk about any events that you probably find in Google Trends, something that is popular and trending at the moment? What is your approach there, and how do you identify trending topics to use for digital PR?
Yeah, we call those like sort of like time sensitive campaigns. If there's something that is trending in the news related to your industry and you have something to say, then that is considered a sort of like a reactive, like expert commentary campaign. Because what you can do is then, let's say the trending topic is, you know, and this was something that was trending a while ago, but like all the companies were calling people back to work, you know, like, don't work at home anymore. You know, you need to get back to the office. So there was a certain, this was like a few years ago, a time when journalists were covering this like return to the office topic. And so what we did for a client is we basically leveraged that trend. Like, we we saw the journalists that were covering these, you know, types of topics. And then we provided our, you know, we kind of like hijacked that topic, and we offered our like expert commentary based on that. So with these types of sort of like trending campaigns or trending topics, you have to act really, really fast. And make sure that you outreach to journalists like right away. There's really no time to waste, because if you miss that window of opportunity, you're not going to get coverage, right? So in the last like couple of months, everyone was talking about all these weight loss, you know, drugs that celebrities are taking. I don't see a lot of that being covered nowadays. I mean, it is, but back then, like a few months ago, everyone was sort of like talking about this. So for another client, a health and fitness client, we reached out to all those journalists that were talking about, you know, Ozempic and all these like weight loss drugs, and then offered their expert opinion and advice about why those, weight loss like pills are not a sustainable solution in the long run for losing weight. So, but again, that window of opportunity was pretty small. So with these types of campaigns, you have to be like really ready to act, and don't go on vacation if you're gonna, you know, if you want to take advantage of this, because you have to move very quickly. With these types of campaigns, there's no time to like create a linkable asset and all that. You just need to create a press release and reach out to those journalists like ASAP.
Yeah, makes sense. And how do you find them? Only in Google Trends or any other places, like Exploding Topics, for example, is another tool?
Yeah, Exploding Topics, Google Trends. I just recommend setting up Google Alerts for your like your industry term, whatever topics that you are important for your website, and set up Google Alerts. Those are free, and then you can get daily alerts or weekly alerts or whatever sent to your inbox, and then you can see kind of like what's trending. I know that Ahrefs also has like the Content Explorer. I mean, there's so many tools out there you can use really to see what's trending in the news. You can just do a Google search yourself and see what's in the news right now.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you think that digital PR campaigns that are focused on B2C then B2B get more coverage?
In the vast majority of cases, yes, because most media outlets are consumer focused. But that's not to say that if you're like a B2B company, you can't create a digital PR campaign. It just needs to be, it just needs to have that broader, B2C appeal, right? So, if you're like a super technical, like software company, right, that sells software to other companies or like provides an automation tool or something like that for agencies or something, you know, you need to think a couple of degrees away from like the core of your services and think about, you know, business topics, employers, employees, and like think broader, right? And then you can come up with a topic that is more relevant and more attractive to journalists. Otherwise, if you're just going to do like a very, very narrow, like B2B topic, really the only publications you can hit up are like the super narrow B2B publications, and there's just not like a ton of those, so you can expect less coverage from that. Yeah.
Besides of that, do you also use any of those platforms such as Haro, Featured, Quoted, and also maybe you go to Twitter and search for the hashtag journal request?
Yeah, so those are again like reactive campaigns, because you're reacting, right? You're reacting to a journalist that is like asking a question. And we did do Haro a lot before, but we just found that it became so saturated and so overrun by like just a lot of spam, unfortunately.
Yeah, they started using AI to produce answers and even to pitch. I used it before the AI boom.
Me too.
And it was so spammed. Like I used it as a publisher and I got a couple of thousands of pitches.
So
most of them were spam. So I can't imagine what happened after the AI boom. Maybe people were getting thousands. But now they rebranded and they are now... And I think it should be better because you have restrictions on how many pitches to submit every month.
Yeah, I'm glad that they made that switch. Yeah, but you know, ever since that happened, we sort of moved away from Harrow and just, yeah, like we're just solely focusing on digital PR, because with digital PR, it's a proactive approach. You're giving journalists stories they might be interested in. You're not responding to their questions, you know? Like you're coming up with new content that you think like, "Hey, this is really good and you should really talk about this on your website." So if that makes sense, yeah, we definitely are moving away from all the kind of reactive, like Harrow type of.
Yeah, I guess that it's also a little bit stressful for an agency to go to Twitter, find those journal requests that say, "I need someone in 30 minutes to create a quote about my article." So this is just so time limited, and you have to go to your customer and act quickly and prepare something, back and forth.
It's so stressful. Yeah. No, and it's just, it's hard too, because, you know, then you're, it's not a sustainable approach really for anyone. Yeah.
Makes sense. And how much does it cost to run a digital PR campaign?
Yeah, if you're doing it on your own or with like an agency like us, or both.
Both are interesting for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you are running your own digital PR campaign and you're using, say, Prowly, you know, Prowly is like a couple hundred bucks a month. You don't really need to subscribe for, you know, more than 1 month. You can just gather your list of prospects in that 1 month subscription timeframe. Or again, you can just do everything manually by just finding journalists manually in Google and X. So if you are looking at public databases as a means to gather your data, then that's free. So there's nothing involved there, really. So in the end, really, you can do a digital PR campaign for less than like a couple hundred dollars, you know? Of course, your time is money too, right? Because you need to factor that in. But from like a tools perspective, you really don't need very much. If you want to go down the survey route, again, if you're going to use like a company like Polefish, that's going to run a couple thousand dollars to do a proper survey campaign. But if you're using your own contacts, if you have a contacts list, then that's going to be free. So it really depends on the nature of like what you already have, like what are the resources you already have. And then, but yeah, if you're doing it yourself, it can, you know, it's just your time, really.
Absolutely, your time and your creativity.
And yeah, if you're looking at an agency like us, you know, we have performance tiers, and our prices start at $6,000 for a campaign.
And what your clients get for $6,000?
It's a whole done for you campaign from start to finish. So it's a 6-to-week a 6-to-8-week process. So we do, you know, we campaign ideation, we gather the data, production, we either run surveys or crunch public data, and then we find trends and everything. We illustrate the data, we create a linkable asset, and then we create the press release, we identify the prospects, the journalists, and we do the outreach for 4 weeks. So it's like a whole entire process from start to finish. We handle everything. All you need to do is approve each step of the way. Like, do you approve the press release? Do you approve the idea, etc.?
And is there any average number of backlinks that you get for your clients, or any minimum that you put as a promise? How does it work? Because people want to have some expectations when they purchase.
Yeah, so we do have minimums that we want to hit. So we want to achieve like between 8 to 10 links at the very, very minimum. And we have pretty high like link criteria, what counts towards our target. So we want to make sure that the links are indexed, that they're do follow, that they're not syndicated, et cetera. So we want to make sure that the link is actually a really good link from an SEO standpoint. We don't count brand mentions, we don't count TV coverage that comes out of this, even though that's really great and that's great for brand building. But we don't count that as a link to our target. And then we, but I mean, I would say, like, on average, if we look at the totality of, like, our results and what we are able to achieve, on average, we get like between 20 to 30 links per campaign.
That's super impressive. I think it's worth it, the money. And you mentioned that you don't count syndicated articles, which is great. A couple of weeks ago, I went to Upwork and I was seeking someone to run a campaign for me because I wanted some digital PR for my new project. I'd like to get some professionals to see what is offered on the market of digital PR. And 99% of them told me, okay, now we are going to write a press release and then we are going to syndicate it. And of course, I have tried that in the past.
Yeah.
I have used Cision and other similar services. And I know very well that you just submit your press release and it gets syndicated to a bunch of different websites. Zero value for SEO.
Yes. And what you can also do to check on the value of those links is plug those into a Google site equals, like, do that little search, right? Like site equals and then the website to see if it's indexed. Because in the vast majority of cases, those syndicated links are not even indexed in Google. Like, so if they're not even in Google's index, then they literally have no value. Like, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. 100%. Actually, it might be published on a very big website such as CNN or Daily Mail, but it is on this PR section, which is like a graveyard.
Exactly, yeah. So in some cases, those publications will completely like block like Google crawlers from those sections altogether. So those articles are no index. So you have to really check on those metrics and make sure like that this is a legitimate backlink. From a legitimate publication that's actually being read by people.
Yeah, great tips. Gabi, thank you. Did I forget to ask you anything or?
No, I think we covered it all. Yeah. If you're looking to do digital PR and you're just getting started, don't be discouraged. Like really just, you got to keep trying. And you will eventually learn what works because you will do a campaign that's successful and you're going to be like, wow, okay, something's different with this one. So you just have to keep trying. That's all you need to do. or reach out to me.
Yeah, of course, of course. There are different types of people out there. Some of them don't have the budget. Some of them try to do it themselves and this is fine. We should help them, teach them, support them. And at the same time, there are big businesses that can purchase your service and have it all done.
Yeah. Yeah. There's different types of people at their own level and we support everyone. So
yeah. Thank you so giving so much value. In under an hour, we discussed everything around digital PR and how to create a successful digital PR campaign. Tell our listeners where they can find more about you, your services, and where they can follow you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can visit our website, brightvalleymarketing.com, bright like the sun. you can email me directly, Gabby, G-A-B-B-Y, at brightvalleymarketing.com. Search for my name, Gabriella Covey, on LinkedIn. I'm trying to get more active on there. I also have a YouTube channel where I talk about not just digital PR, but also content marketing and SEO, because we do that as well. Everything's like kind of tied in. It's very related. So follow me on YouTube and watch for my videos. I try to release one every few weeks. So
perfect. I will leave links in the show notes to everything that you mentioned so people can easily find you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Georgie. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Gabi. Have a good day.
You too. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.